Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Durst and possibly the Twisted Mister or Two. I am Pam Ray. With me tonight is my co-host, Naomi Sarah and Diane D. Naomi, Diane, and myself are all poets on All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Make sure if you get a chance to check out our other shows, because you can find something to suit your taste. We have a variety of styles of topics and poetry. Also, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, ladies. Glad to have you both here.
Hello.
Hello. Great to be here.
Yes, yes. So glad you could be. And how's it going, Naomi?
Oh, it was raining today, so I'm into this series, these books these days. I can't put them down. So, yeah, reading. So, yeah.
Oh, nice.
It was wet and rainy, so I read.
That is a perfect day to read when it's all that wet and rainy. Now, how about you, Diane? How's your day going?
Well, it's not wet and rainy, but I got myself a little bit of a head cold, so I'm kind of... not raining.
No, I completely get that. Those head colds can be definitely very rough to deal with. There's something very kind of beautiful and like almost water fluid like in its movement to that Indian style of music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mm-hmm. I find that, you know. And so I'm going to say a little bit about tonight's topic. Tonight we're going to delve into poetry that was inspired by a variety of poems by Rabindranath Tagore. Tagore was actually the anglicized version of his last name. And in fact, his full name, I'm not even sure I could pronounce that well. In fact, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing this name that well. But, you know, anyway, so he is actually a polymath. A polymath is a person who is multi-talented in several areas. He was, and I'm reading this off of his Wikipedia page, he was a poet, a novelist, dramatist, essayist, story writer, composer — that song was actually composed by him — played by a modern day group from India, but written by him, painter, philosopher, social reformer, educationist, linguist, and grammarian. The prompts we used in the contest were some of his poems, and of course people could, you know, grab any Tagore prompt that they wanted to, but I had offered up some of his poems, some of his artwork, and some of his quotes to offer up a variety. He was actually a major part of the Bengali Renaissance, because he was from Bengal, India. And he was referred to as the Bengali bard. His literary movement was the contextual modernism. One of the things that he is well known for is that he was actually the first non-European to be awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. He was actually the youngest of 13 surviving children, so he came from quite a big family. And let's see, there was one more interesting thing. Oh, here we go. About his artwork. Now, if anybody has a chance to look at his artwork, whether you look at the contest that we ran, or you take a look at, just Google him and look at his artwork, one of the things you'll notice is how it has a very surreal look to it. And one of the things about him is that he actually modernized Bengali art by spurning rigid classical forms and resisting linguistic strictures. And his poet and his music all spoke on topics political and personal. And in fact, his wife actually committed suicide. And a lot of his poetry after her death reflects the sadness that he felt in those years. So that's just some of the stuff that, you know, to learn about Tagore. And all right, ladies, I'm going to bring on a guest, and we'll go ahead and move forward. So here we go. First of all, I'd like to say welcome, Laurent. Glad you could join us.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, all.
Hi.
And how are you doing?
Good enough to be here. Let's put it that way.
You sound better. Well, I am glad you are good enough to be here. Wonderful. And all right. So I'm going to start us out with a classic poem, obviously from Tagore, called Where the Mind is Without Fear. And Laurent, would you read that for us, please?
You caught me with my mouth full of cheese and bread. I'm in trouble. Hang on. Okay. This is actually the quote, the part that I use on my phone. This is a hell of a poem. Where the mind is without fear. Where the mind is without fear and the head is held high. Where knowledge is free. Where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way, into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward by thee, into ever-widening thought and action, into that heaven of freedom, my Father, let my country awake. And
wonderful read there, Laurent. And yes, you're right. This is a hell of a poem. You know, I could have chosen any one of Tagore's poetry because it's all beautiful, but I really felt like this one particularly related a lot. It's timeless. It's a timeless poem on a timeless topic of how people need to, you know, be open to one another's differences, but at the same time, find that common ground that, you know, there's a beautiful sense of spirituality in this. And yet, you know, there's that, I really love lines like, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth. I feel like this is all about speaking in truth, speaking in love. And I really also liked where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habits. Like, let's not do the same things over and over again because that's the way it's been done for years. Let's open our minds to new possibilities. So, yeah, I really felt like this poem did speak to me, and was, you know, that's why I chose it for the intro. And Diane, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Oh, this is powerful, a powerful piece. Where the mind is without fear, and fear itself, you know, fear is either motivating or immobilizing. And the way she describes everything here is like there's a lot of optimism. And it all comes out to freedom. If your mind is without fear, there's freedom. And the last line, I think he was saying, you know, let everybody know this. Speak the depth of truth when words come out. And I believe writing is for truth. And what he's done here is just powerful. I'm so grateful to be introduced to him.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful comment. I do like how you brought up how the mind, when it's, you know, there's no fear, it becomes free. So excellent comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I see also, you know, he's talking about India here, obviously. And, you know, there was so much going on in India, you know, the separation and, you know, the against the, they were under the English rule there. And, so I see that in the poem, too, that you can't ignore, you know, talking about, you know, standing up for yourselves, having your own ideas and not staying inact, you know, taking action to free yourself and to be independent. I see that in the poem. And also, you know, it can be taken also very philosophical, of course, you know, to oneself, as you said, you know, that as on a personal level also that Diane touched on and you touched on too, that, you know, you have to stretch towards being the best person you can be, I think, you know. And just an amazing, amazing poem, you know, to go without where go, let your mind go where there is without fear, you know, let yourself go there. And I think he says it amazingly well.
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful comment there, Naomi. And yes, you're right. There was a time where India was under British rule, and there were people who wanted it to remain that way, and there were people who didn't. And Rabindranath Tagore was one who wanted India to have its independence from British rule. So really great observation there. And Lawrence, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, I thought I grew up in a country where knowledge was free, where words come from the depths of truth, where the clear stream of reason had not lost its way, where the mind was led forward into ever-widening thought and action. I grew up thinking that's where I lived, only to find out many years later it was all aspirational and that our feet are of clay like anyone else's. And so this poem moved me deeply because I'm hoping that this country somehow awakens into that heaven of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Well said, Lauren. Great comments, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And up next, we have The Long Lost Lineage by Poetic Creation. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. The Long Lost Lineage. Between the howling of the wolf and the rising moon, he silently drifts with an egret by his side, but its song remains unheard, though the colors of its flat feathers speak in volumes. The bright gold illuminates a dark path untraveled, like a ribbon born of the sun that warms blue lips and purple toes, pursuing the uncharted expanding folds of time and space, where red represents passion to seize this moment. For the last star flickers out, chastised by oblivion. Deaf are his ears, yet the pigments tell the tale of a phoenix longing for the flight. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Naomi. What a beautiful write by Poetic Creations. And Lawrence.
Oh, this is a wonderful piece. Between the howling of the wolf and the rising moon, he silently drifts. And the referral to the colors of its feathers, the bright gold, like a ribbon born of the sun, that warms blue lips and purple toes, a red represents passion, and then he puts it all together. At the end, deaf are his ears, yet the pigments tell the tale of a phoenix longing for the flight. Not said in so many words, yet the pigments could tell the tale within that individual. Is that longing to burst into flame and rise above it all? It's a terrific piece.
It truly is, yes. I have to agree with you. And, yeah, I, too, really liked that message of the individual, as you said, who wants to be reborn and rise above it all. So, excellent comment. And, Diane, your thoughts?
Well, I really enjoyed this piece. I read it earlier, and this was one of the art pieces when you mentioned it earlier, Pam, that stood out to me. It was like, okay, I want to write for this. But it's the way this was written and, you know, the long-lost lineage and the egret by its side, that just stood out to me. It just was a powerful image. I see that in that image as well. And you know, egrets are powerful animals, and they're always looking out. And I see a lot of, in this piece, looking for positives, because every last line, like a ribbon born of the sun, to seize the moment of a phoenix longing for the flight. I just see this rejuvenation and looking for the positive, and it's a powerful piece, very well written, well worded, and very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like that you brought up that part about the egret by his side. It almost has that feeling of having a spiritual guide, or a spirit animal guide. And but its song remains unheard is so sad, almost like the idea of the voices that still need to be heard that are lost in the crowd. I thought you had some wonderful observations there. Thank you, Diane. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I wonder if, because the egret, you know, up to the year I was reading, up to the year 2020 was a species that was what do you call that in English?
Endangered.
Thank that is going away. That is endangered. Was an endangered species. So,
oh, wow.
You know, that and the long lost lineage, you know, I wonder if Poetic Creations wanted to draw that line there, you know, when he chose an egret, because, you know, they were on the endangered species list. But now they're doing well, thankfully. You know, their numbers are up, and they're not on the list anymore. But you know, that's the first thing that I noticed. You know, between the title and the egret there. But you know, just a beautiful write all through. You know, with the colors and the. And you know, the phoenix in the end, just such a like a spiritual feeling to the whole poem here, and just beautifully written by Poetic Creations all the way through.
Absolutely, that was a great comment, Naomi. I like that you brought up the egret was on the endangered list, because I think that like. Strengthens the idea of it as a metaphor for, you know, surviving. And I really liked this all the way through. It had wonderful imagery, and I really liked what you all had to say. I especially, though, found myself drawn to that third stanza, that warms blue lips and purple toes pursuing the uncharted, expanding folds of time and space, where red represents passion to seize this moment. I feel like the blue lips and the purple toes almost speak of like death or, you know, being stagnant. And there's this idea of expanding beyond oneself, of, you know, fully embracing the joy and the of life. you know, so just a wonderful poem and very well done. And let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have, let me get back to Late Night Poets now and put that link up. All right. Up next, we have Wishing is Good, Action is Better by Random Scribbler. And Diane, would you give that a read for us, please?
I would love to. Wishing is good, action is better. Indeed, I don't possess the opulence to equal those of the high flyers, yet I am not penniless. For sure, I don't have the grandeur to rival those of the majesties, yet I am not a mendicant. Noteworthy it is that numerous beings across the globe are deprived of even this trifling beneficence. Still, dear heart, if you're not happy with what you have got, if you want the lion's share, then you will have to be a lion heart. Give it your best shot. If you are desperate enough for something, you are the one who will be exerting and toiling. The patron doesn't come. It is the pleader who has to present themselves for the meeting. After all, it is the dehydrated who has to make their way to the stream. The river stays put where it is. Futile it is. It is pointless. For you to be miserable and be a crybaby, darling, if you don't have the aspiration to attain anything. End quote.
Wonderful read there, Diane. And I really like this write by Random Scribbler that's filled with just all kinds of words of wisdom and metaphors to express the idea that if you want something, you have to go for it. You know, beautifully written couplets that have a nice flow to them. I really like that she uses imagery such as the patron doesn't come. It is the pleader who has to present themselves for the meeting. After all, it is the dehydrated who has to make their way to the stream. The river stays put where it is. If you want something, you can't just stand there daydreaming about it and it will come to you. You have to get out there. You have to get it. And I thought the idea of the dehydrated going to the stream was a perfect example of if you need something, you crave something, you know, go out there, you know, get it for yourself, or at least put in the effort and try. You know, as she says, if you don't have the for you to be futile it is pointless for you to be miserable and be a crybaby, darling, if you don't have the aspiration to attain anything. You know, if you don't even try, you know, and all you do is stand around and cry that everything didn't come to you, what good is it doing you? You know, I really felt there was a poignant impact to the message of those lines. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I thought this was an amazing take on the prompt there, which is you can't cross the sea by merely standing by standing and staring at the water. And me too, I was really drawn to you know the stream, the way the poet says. After all, it is the dehydrated who has to make their way to the stream. The river stays put where it is. It's so true, you know. If you can, you have to have the courage, and you have to have the want, the will to advance and to get what you want, because it won't come to you. You have to try. You have to have at least a bit of ambition there, to go out and get what you want, because everything won't fall right into your lap. You have to go and get it. And this is wonderfully put, you know, all the way through. And just in a wonderful, wonderful right to that prompt there.
It really is. Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I really like this one as well. That one line, still dear heart, if you are not happy with what you have got, if you want the lion's share, then you will have to be a lion heart. I mean, you have to be Muhammad, willing to go to the mountain, because it's not going to come to you. Beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Well said there. And Diane, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, this was amazing. You know, when I went and read up on Tagore, I my mind said, what a powerful man that passes messages that the world needs to hear. And I always think if I hear something I need to hear, then it's been a good day. And this man, Tagore, he passes on all these messages in life. And then when I read this, I thought, random scribbler, you are so in touch with with Tagore, with his work, with his feel and everything. I'm thinking, you know, we have a little Tagore on our hands here, because just the positive things in the message here. Wishing is good, action is better. Don't be a human being, be a human doing. You know, take action. Don't try, do. And he says that in so many ways. Like, if you want the lion's share, then you will have to be a lion heart. If you want to read the book, go write it. And his message is so powerful. And I find Random Scribbler picked up on Tagore so well, beautifully done.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And I like that you brought up the title, because even the title itself had an important message. You know, so... excellent comment there. And up next we have A Butterfly by Weaver of Dreams. And we do have a recording for that one. So let's see. I know it's here. And here we go.
Some compare me to a butterfly. I flit, I flutter, and float. That's true. The men in my life are like flowers. I take a sip here. Then on to the new. It cannot be helped, it's my nature. One is never enough, nor are two. Monogamy is a man-made dictate. As for me, polyandry will do. I've often been asked, am I not enough? Well, dear heart, the answer has to be no. Months for you pass by in seconds for me. I love quicker, live faster, it's all that I know. Do I want a normal existence? What do you think? You know the answer to that question, I'm sure. Why be trapped by the trite tick-tock of your time, when here, where love's unlimited, I can soar?
Wonderful read and write there, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Naomi, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I was like this a long time, flitting from one to another. I wonder, when I read this earlier, I said, oh, my gracious, she's thinking of me when she wrote this. You know, this is a wonderful but this is a wonderful metaphor for, you know, not losing your time. And, you know, like the prompt was the butterfly has only counts his life in only moments. But, you know, has enough. And, yeah, I can see how this right relates to the prompt. You know, why waste your time, like in this case, this metaphor, on one person when you can, like, explore and, you know, really enjoy, because it is enjoying, you know, a lot, you know, why have just one, you know, man, if you can have a lot in your lifetime. And yeah, so I think it was a wonderful, wonderful rite. And, you know, I loved your little laugh there. Do I want a normal existence? What do you think? And, you know, she kind of giggled there. And you know the answer to that question, I'm sure. Why be trapped by the tick-tock of your time when here, where love's unlimited, I can soar? So just the soaring of the butterfly. And the exploration of multiple loves in your life, you know, why not? You know, I'm all for that, you know. And yeah, I just love the way she wrote this, and the questions throughout it make it all that more personalized, I think, as a write. And yeah. I love this little piece by Weaver of Dreams.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. There is a nice note with the questions asked, and it is a wonderful exploration of a different lifestyle, you know, and the idea of, as you're mentioning, the physical pleasures of having more than one partner. So great comment there, Naomi. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, the comparison to the butterfly is just perfect. Why be trapped by the trite tick-tock of your time when here, where love's unlimited, I can soar? And she does it very skillfully and very unabashedly, because I will tell you what. This is a poem a man might not be able to write because he would just be called a pig.
Yes.
Double stamp here. Good thing is
poem. Oh yeah. Well said there, Lawrence. And but yeah, you're right. This is
so
skillfully done and definitely unabashedly so. Well said there. And Diane, your thoughts?
Well, I'm still giggling here. I just read this the first time, and I caught the message in the poem with the prompt, you know, that to heck with time and to heck with looking down the road. I'm going to live for the moment. I'm not going to look into the months. I'm going to look into the moments, because if I and that second last line, why be trapped by the trite tick-tock of your time? I love her alliteration in here too. I flutter and float. I love that. But the tick-tock of your time, like, live for the moment and do what you can in the moment. And if you do, you'll have more time. And then when I read it the second time and I got to the second stanza and I thought, oh, Weaver, you go, girl. And then I just read it and I went through the questions too, and I'm like, you know, yeah, you know the answer to that question. I'm not going to live this ordinary life. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to flip, flutter, and float. And I'm like, you flip, girl.
Absolutely. Well said there, Diane. And you're right, beautiful alliteration. I flit, I flutter, and float. And wonderful use of the word of language, of the words monogamy and polyandry. You know, and I do like that this expresses the idea of a free spirit. And I think she just beautifully expresses that. And I did like the questions and the sense of movement within this rite. So beautifully written and very well done. And now the question is did I grab the next poem? Yes, I did. Let me put that up. All right. And oh my goodness. All right. And up next, we have Out of Breath by S. Sharp. And it goes like this. Distance pours through the fading sunlight, a waterfall diving on the sword of familiarity, bloodletting, transcendence splashing, liquefied mortality. Lungs take in the abrasive air of sacrifice, fighting the currents, swimming upstream, knowing one breath leads to the next. Oxygen and carbon dioxide exchange. Breathe in, breathe out. Always one breath out of tune with each other. End poem. What a wonderful write by S. Sharp. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Oh, this is very clever. Yeah, I like what he's done in this. Lungs take in the abrasive air of sacrifice, fighting the currents, swimming upstream, knowing one breath leads to the next. Oxygen and carbon dioxide exchange, breathe in, breathe out, always one breath out of tune with each other. Just a great last line that just takes the whole poem and condenses it down in perfection. I really like this.
I have to agree, absolutely. Well said there. And Diane, your thoughts?
Oh, this was powerful. Lungs take in the abrasive air of sacrifice, fighting the current, swimming upstream. It seems like there's so much turmoil, but the message for me was just breathe and stay in tune. Don't be out of tune with each other, always one breath out of tune. That's such a powerful line. Always one breath out of tune with each other. That's humanity, I find we're always one breath out of tune. I find that with people sometimes anyway. But really well written and powerful messages.
Absolutely. I like that you mentioned that, the idea of being out of tune with each other. And I think not only can we be out of tune with each other, but we can be out of tune with even ourselves. So excellent comment there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, the first thing that struck me when I read this is I was wondering if Scott was a fisherman, because this makes me think of the salmon. And the salmon, when they sacrifice themselves to go lay their eggs, they go upstream. They fight the currents. They go upstream. They fight their way over a waterfall, they come back with the rush of the water. They're so tired out, and they fight again, and they fight their way upstream over waterfalls, over against the rapids. And, just till they end up dying in the end, when they lay their eggs, so this made me think, because I fish, and this made me think of the salmon, the salmon, and also us fighting, against the movement of the upstream in our everyday lives, just to survive sometimes. So those were the thoughts that came to me when I read this, and it just really touched me. This whole write, it's just superb.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like that you brought because it does have that feel of like the way the salmon struggle, upstream, so which makes me think that Scott is either a fisherman or he's a grizzly bear that knows how to write poetry. and I'm going to call him a fisherman. Yeah, right. Great comment, Naomi. Yeah, I really like how this is like an extended metaphor for the struggles that we put ourselves in that maybe we don't need to put ourselves in. I did like this all the way through. I really felt there was some powerful imagery in a waterfall diving on the sword of familiarity, bloodletting, transcendence, splashing, liquefied mortality. The sword of familiarity. I like how that really speaks on, you know, how oftentimes if we can't change our ways, we end up hurting ourselves as much as we end up hurting the people around us. So definitely a powerful brevity. It's very well done. And next we have Cardiology Phrenology by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Cardiology's Phrenology. Perennial push of peony buds to bloom. Pertinent pink bridal profusion pleases the groom. Hollyhocks celebrate cocky equinoxes. Snow bells shove. Heave ho against snow drifts. Winter's falsetto fugue whittled away. Tigress, temptress, love will have it no other way. Heart's perennial millennial wax and wane. Lone coyote quadrilles trill in comprehension. Octaves bite a gate aghast into desert cold. Seeks to fill a hunger pang beyond comprehension. Between Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn runs heated equator adjudicator. But the nature of love isn't geographical. Longitude's illustrious ideals, purple rain principles. Immediate crucifixion on latitudes, thorny cacti attitudes. Oh, hush, harsh world so contemptuous of love. No wonder our planet's Arctic head is frozen, its southernmost twinkle toes decapitated by ice. Adjudicator equator heart beats through rain and shine. Meridian pleats our own leaden hearts to never skip a beat. Cardiology's phrenology best explains love's nature. Parallel high roads and low roads finally converge. Oh, so easy to GPS my Elon Musk mind. Pointed pixie ears daily tracks through stars. Mothership Earth always tows me back. Umbilical cord somersault back into love's gravitas. I've journey Mitchell'd clouds. Shirley Bassey belted out the rhythm divine. So speak not so easily of love's nature. For this tigress temptress turns tall trees into crucifixion crosses. For she's the cosmic yeast that raises our mortal, mundane vibrations. Bet our frozen northern heads and frost-bitten southern twinkle toes. Tigress, Temptress, Love, daily Khalil Gibran's us on her threshing floor. Best, we embrace our heated adjudicator, equator, hearts, end poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Diane, let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, it's just, there's so many metaphors in here. I don't know where to start, except I first have to say I love the reference to Khalil Gibran. I just, that's one of my faves. And already, you know, I've heard Eric's work, but I've not really read a lot of it. I have to start reading it because this is phenomenal. The alliteration, again, I'm taking in by the alliteration, and the love will have it no other way. The message of the nature of love. And he mentions twinkle toes a couple times, and that makes me smile. I feel like his reference is, you know, to what Tagore is saying himself. He says, the night is black and the forest has no end. And he starts out with a perennial push of peony buds to bloom. Like, I just love the way he coupled it in with the way Tagore started out his. It's just a powerful piece.
It really is. Absolutely. You're right. This is a wonderful alliteration. I'm glad you brought up. I too, was really drawn to the Khalil Gibran reference because he's also one of my favorites. So very cool that we have that in common. And wonderful comment there, Diane. And Laurent, your thoughts?
It's so hard to it's so easy for me to overappreciate what this poet does. Every time I read one of his poems, I think, he's not going to write anything any better. And he always manages to, especially here, where between the perennial push of peony buds in the spring to winter's falsetto fugue whittled away, there is love, and it waxes and wanes like the seasons do down the middle. Between Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn runs the heated equator adjudicator. I love what he writes. Immediate crucifixion on latitudes, thorny cacti, attitudes. Oh, hush, harsh world, so contemptuous of love. And it is contemptuous in so many ways, and yet so welcoming in others. I also love the Khalil Gibran reference, which is one of just a number of fantastic metaphors. And the use of the word phrenology, you know, the reading the bumps on a person's head is remarkably well done, because in the same way, you read the bumps on the world. And I thought it was just excellent.
Absolutely. And yeah, that is a good point you brought up with how he used the word phrenology, and which I thought was quite clever. And I feel the same way about Eric's writing. So oftentimes he just, you know, keeps impressing me over and over again. So well said there, Lauren. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, me, I had to look up the word phrenology, of course, because I didn't know what it meant. And it's impressive, you know, that they measure the bumps and the way our skull is formed to see personality traits that are common to some bumps, I guess. And you know that the mind and the skull controls, you know, the instead of the heart. What I see here is, you know, he's written to the prompt five, which has to do with the nature of love. And with all he says in here, the longitude and the latitude And, you know, of course, Laura brought up an important part, the bumps of on the earth, the bumps of the world, but also, you know, to do with love. I wonder if he's hinting on that maybe, you know, the love doesn't come necessarily from the longitude or the latitude of the heart, but from the mind itself. Anyway, that's what I read into the poem. But, you know, I have to say, what wonderful alliteration and what a wonderful write. And, you know, it just drew me in. And, you know, I had to reread it I couldn't stop reading it over and over again and trying to analyze it bit by bit. And, you know, wonderful poetry will make you do that. And this made me really ponder on each couplet here and, you know, really try and dig in. And, you know, each one is just amazing, you know. It's more than the other. So all together, just an amazing, amazing write here by Eric, you know, so intelligently written.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, I too really did like that part where it says, but the nature of love isn't geographical, longitude, the illustrious ideals, purple rain principles. Yeah, I like that he delves into the nature of love, the idea of how love can be a variation of, I think it speaks on the idea of love being a part of what connects the mind and the heart. I like the modern movie references, like the GPS and the Joni Mitchell's Cloud, Shirley Bassey belted out the rhythm divine. I thought that was just really, really just fun and clever. You know, and just all in all, just to me, a wonderful write, you know, on the idea of love and how it moves and adjusts and it doesn't stay in a box. So excellent write and very well done. And up next we have, welcome back, Diane. And up next we have your poem, Laurent. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Thank you. There are times when what I want to say is a little easier said by Archie. And anyone who doesn't know what Archie is, it's a very Lieber poet reincarnated as a cockroach who labors over a manual typewriter in his boss's garage at night. And he doesn't do punctuation very easily, but now that he's got an old laptop, he chooses to punctuate only when necessary. And I use prompt number one. The mind is without fear. If your boss, a bad seed, has come to town, worthy of my mention, due to his foul intention, you know I rhyme when anxious. Toto, we're no longer in Kansas. A tale of tales I tell, a swarm of colored carapace, how came a ne'er-do-well into this time and place, misbegotten creature, with avarice in his soul, self-appointed preacher, whose iron words seek control. Deep in the velvet underground lies the pantheon of the roach, portico of plastic on which the wretch encroached. Imperiously clothed, vestments sewn from a sow's ear, he preached unto the multitude, roaches gathered from far and near. I am an American cockroach, he began. A simple sort of fellow, not the foreign breed of roach, whose carapace is tinted yellow. America is for Americans, original orchestra, not pretenders, tuneless blood of scuffy scribes, ragged confluence of offenders. Let them moan and cry and return with the speed they came. Let them forego their native land, let them forage their native land. Each genus to do the same. There was silence from the throng. than a muttering that augured ill. Catcalls began to echo wildly, soft at first, then loud and shrill. Preacher raised his voice, motioning with his antennae. One by one, the rats came forth, few at first, and then the many. My friends, the rats are your protection from the others who steal our bread. Let none among you quarrel or gainsay the words I've said. Shiny brown or glossy black are the colors beyond question. All others depart. You have a day before the rats begin ingestion. To those who flaunt my law, the rats will deal a silent squeal. The teeth will rip and rend. There will be no mercy, no appeal. Boss, I haven't slept since then. This is what I know thereof. Quoting Hitchens, it's everything I hate versus everything I love. This story has no end. It's a real world work in progress. Hatred hammers hard. The genuine fear, I must confess. Old Will had it right. Double, double, toil and trouble. I can feel the flames as fire burns and cauldron bubbles. Yours, boiling over, Archie. P.S. Remembering Emerson, who said we all boil at different degrees.
Wonderful read there, Lauren. And anyone who hasn't read Lawrence Archie writes, I highly recommend that you check them out. And of course, you know, I also highly recommend that you check out the original Archie writes done by Don Monkey. I really like this. And you're right, there are times when you need to bring out a character like Archie to voice. And what I really like is that you took that prompt, you know, that was a poem, When the Mind is Free, and you brought the concept into modern times. And I'll admit, this makes me teary-eyed. But it's what the poem makes me think of, which is, of course, that horrific shooting in Buffalo, New York, which, you know, to me, my heart and my prayers, you know, go out to the family and friends of the victims, and, you know, just such a senseless act of violence. This poem brought that to my mind, but, you know, to me, you need that little bit of, you know, Archie in, you know, to express such painful ideas. I really like the play of words of a tale of tales I tell. And, you know, it's, to me, all the way through, this poem is a wonderful expression of how easily the masses are swayed. And especially nowadays, and thankfully it's not everyone. You know, there are a lot of great, good people out there, people with good hearts, people helping each other, reaching out to each other. And using social media for good. But there are those out there voicing hate, and there are lemmings who will follow anyone. Some people are just able to unfortunately sway the masses, but thankfully not everyone. An excellent voiced right. My friends, the rats are your protection from the others who steal our bread. Let none among you quarrel or gainsay the words I said. You know, just to me, those are very powerful lines in the idea of how too often society becomes like as if it's run by a mafia, and it's Do it our way or else, or do it our way because we are protecting you. So just a powerful right learned and very well done.
Thank you.
And Diane, your thoughts?
So I found this very powerful too, the message in it. First of all, I like Archie. I got to check more of Archie out. But the Archie boils over and to the prompt, the mind, where the mind is without fear. Excuse me for a second. Where the mind is without fear. And I like how it talks about boiling over, and I liken it to how we all handle life. We know some of us boil over and some of us handle it, but we all do it differently. And it's like, you know, it just made me remember about, you know, what I feel about life is like we're all on this journey. And we're all taking this journey, and we all have different ways to get to a destination. And everybody's destination, everybody's journey along the way is different. Like somebody might get a flat tire. Somebody might have to turn around and go back. But everybody's destination is the same. And that's what it kind of makes me think of, is going through life with different degrees, different destination, or same destination, but different ways to get there and stuff. And I don't know, this just really made me think, okay, I got to go read more about Archie. Really well done.
Thank you.
Great comment there, Diane. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this is made me think of the shooting too, and you know, and everything that's wrong with the world. And everything that's wrong with society. And, you know, we're having a hard time here in Montreal right now. I don't know. You probably don't have the news of Montreal. But, you know, the shootings in Montreal are just, like, awful now. We've never seen it. We don't know that. You know, you guys are more worse, are more used to. Well, you never get used to stuff like that. But, I mean, you hear more about it. But here in Montreal right now, there's a real, I don't know how to say it, like an epidemic of shootings, gun shootings since a while. And, we feel like the city is boiling over here. And, you know, I don't know Archie, but, you know, it's not in my culture, but I, you know, I have to go and read him too, because it seems so interesting. And, you know, this right here, you know, there's such, it's such, so powerful, Laurent, and, you know, the way you wrote it, it's just amazing. You know, old Will had it right. Double, double toil and trouble. I can feel the flames as fire burns and cauldron bubbles. Yours bubble over, Archie. P.S. Remembering Emerson, you said we all boil at different degrees. Yeah, we have to learn to, you know, to be more acceptant of other people and to keep our, I don't know, this, all this rage, or I don't know, this, to control ourselves more or get under control or whatever. But, you know, it's awful what's happening and what's out there, and you know, how society is easily influenced nowadays by all this propaganda. I think internet has a great play in it. I think young people on the internet, they're just prone to propaganda, and you know, I think it has a big role to play in what's happening. But anyway, but this is just amazing right all the way through. I don't know if it was intended, but shiny brown or glossy black are the colors beyond questions. All others depart. You have a great day before the rats begin ingestion. You know, whether it was a racial questioning there, you know, to speak out about against race, racist people there, you know. But I, I don't know if I read wrong into that there, but, you know, just an amazing write all through here that brings up a lot of questions about the society in which we live today. And amazing, amazing write.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't think you read that wrong. And you're right, it does bring up a lot of questions about society. So wonderful observations there, Naomi. And Lauren, was there
anything? Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, was there anything you wanted to say about your poem?
Well, on what Naomi said, I thought it was a little ironic to use the colors shiny brown or glossy black, which are the aim of such hatred, as the correct colors to be right now. Because it doesn't matter what color you are, ultimately, somebody out there has your number and wants to hate you.
Yeah,
I tried to join a little bit of ancient history with Pantheon. And, of course, Christopher Hutchins, Will Shakespeare, and R.W. had their own wisdom to add to this. It took me 3 days to write this. I wanted to get it in the contest, but I couldn't finish it in time.
Well, I'm glad you were inspired. Thank you. And, all right, so up next I have Open Waters by Daniel Descino. And I actually need a couple minutes. So, Naomi, if you would read this, and when you're done reading, lead everyone in comments, you know, like assign who's going to comment first, who's going to comment second, and then who's going to comment third.
Yeah.
And then I'll be back to
comment
fourth. All right. Thank you very much.
No problem. Okay. Did she say me read it?
Yes.
Open
yes,
Waters.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay. Open Waters. So he read, "You Can't Cross the Sea," wrote to the quote, "You can't cross the sea by standing and staring at the water. Sail on, young traveler, sail, elated among time. Sing proud of your travels. Sing, feel, rap, and rhyme. Do you still hold hands with the romance of air? You should, if you don't, sail free without care. Summer brings sun to guide and delight, winter a prelude of more summers in sight. Grab hold of spring winds as the tree flowers sail, and let autumn be respite to tell your great tale." And poem. And Laurent, can you start us off with comments on this poem, please?
Certainly. As he begins, "Sail on, young traveler, sail elated among time." Despite the brevity of the piece, he manages to involve the seasons as perfect metaphors for singing, for feeling, for rapping, for rhyming. "You still hold hands with a romance of air." A wonderful line that is. "And winter, a prelude of more summer in sight." And then, of course, "Let autumn be respite to tell your great tale." Let yourself relax a little bit. And then during the autumn, tell your great tale, which he does. It's a wonderful response to the prompt and a very skillful brevity.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, I agree. I love the how "sing proud of your travels," sing, feel, rap, rhyme, and then he brings in the seasons there. Just amazing, amazing comment there, Laurent. And Diane, your thoughts?
I think this is very well done for, like, with so few words, you know, great brevity. And I feel like he's just, you know, again, I love the messages coming out in these pieces. They're all so closely connected with Tagore and really well done with his art and quotes and stuff. But summer brings sun to guide and light. So it's like, just go, he's saying, go ahead, you know, go forward. Don't stand and stare at the water. You're not going to get there if you stand and stare. It's like, you know, if you want a coffee, you're going to have to turn the pot on. You have to do these things, but go forward. And then he's saying, you know, summer will take you to the sun and the light, and then winter is going to be more of that. So don't even look at what's beyond summer. Take winter and go with it, because it's going to be more of summer. And then he talks about how, you know, grab hold of spring, you know, reach for the things that are going to give you the energy and the guidance and the strength to keep going. And then let autumn be respite to tell your great tale. Take a break, you know, take a break in autumn, but keep going, and don't stop and don't stare, just move forward. It just put a powerful message out, and I really appreciated it. Great write.
Yeah, indeed. I love how he took the seasons, you know, and to connected them so cleverly, so brilliantly to that prompt, you know, that seized the time, seize it. Whatever season it is, just don't stop. Sail forward, whether it's through summer, through winter, through spring, through autumn. Just enjoy life and enjoy the time. And, you know, as the seasons pass by, I just think, you know, Daniel made himself into a philosopher here, but he is. So, you know, he is in his rights. So it's so powerful and so deep in his writing. And then this is another example here, just an amazing, amazing write, you know. And like you said, Diane, so few words. He brought up such a powerful, powerful message. And, yeah, amazing, amazing right here by Daniel. And Pam, are you back?
I am, yes. And okay. Thank you, Naomi. Thank you, everyone. And, yeah, I really like how, Diane, you did mention about how, you know, like in so few words, he got across this powerful message. And, you know, this definitely is not going to be an easy contest to judge, because, you know, the people are very much in tune with the prompts themselves. I really like that you brought up the seasons, Naomi, because, you know, to me, the seasons represent the different, you know, sections of life that you go through. I really like the message of this, of live life to the fullest. You know, in every season of life, do you still hold hands with the romance of air? You should if you don't. Sail free without care. Just a wonderful, wonderful write on just letting go and freeing yourself. So wonderful write and very well done. And up next we have Distant Shores by Selena, and we have a recording for that one, so let me mosey on over there, and here we go.
Distant shores beckon my wistful, weary soul. Too long have I dwelt in limbo at the water's edge, afeard of the murky depths of what lies beneath. Knowing that salvation lies beyond the ebb and flow of the tide, needing to wade a little deeper, as with each day I die a little more. The lapping, lathery tongue tempts me, with its tender touch. Yet should I brave the cruel Charybdis before me, only to flounder and drown in the darkened abyss below? Or will soothing sirens guide me to a sanctuary beyond the horizon? How I yearn to swim in life's ocean once more, to feel its pull. Looking across the ocean swells, I see a blazing beacon casting its path, stretching to my feet, giving me courage. The first tentative step is the hardest, but with each I feel my spirit surge. Joyously it soars as I run, the far distant land growing nearer. And inside, a voice whispers, have courage, there is hope ahead. For you can't cross the sea by merely bystanding and staring at the water.
Wonderful read and write there, Selena. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, let's start with your thumb.
I was so happy to finally hear her voice. Oh, my gracious. She has a wonderful reading voice. And, you know, that SoundCloud was so beautiful with the music just set the mood for the whole poem, which was just brilliant. I just love the lapping, lathery tongue tempts me with its tender touch, yet should I brave the cruel Charybdis before me. I love how she brought in the Greek mythology, you know, with that water monster there. I just love how she attacked the prompt, looking across the ocean swells. I see a blazing beacon casting its path, stretching to my feet, giving me courage. The first tentative step is the hardest. You know, it's true that the first step that you take to go forward through a difficulty is the hardest one. And I think that's so important that she put that in here and so brilliantly said, you know, that to that prompt. It captures that prompt so well. And, yeah, this is just an amazing, amazing write. And that she added in the prompt there at the end there. Just amazing. Have courage. There is hope ahead. The voice inside whispers. Just amazing, amazing right all through. Bravo, Selena, for the SoundCloud, your voice, and, you know, for this wonderful, wonderful right. Just brilliant.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment there, Naomi. I did like how you brought the part about the lapping, lathered tongue tempts me with the tender touch. Yet should I brave the cruel Charybdis before me? The idea that, you know, if I just put my toes in the ocean, it feels good, it feels safe, but do I want to go further into those deeper waters? So excellent comment, Naomi. And Diane, your thoughts?
Well, great comment, Naomi, and I agree. The music was perfect. The music just, and the pauses with the music. It was just such a creatively well done SoundCloud. I felt sad, you know. The sadness I felt was like as if somebody had realized that they had stood there for the, you know, like the writer had stood there and stared at the water long enough that it was a lost time. And, you know, needing to wade a little deeper as with each day I die a little more. And my mind just and my heart just took on hoping that you know, that there's time to get there, because, and then going further into the piece, you know, and hearing that the writer got there and the courage came with it to get there, and then got there by the inner voice that sounds like held her back for so long that now that inner voice says there's hope ahead. So it's like, you know, she waited a long time, but now she got there, and it's powerful, and I want to know more. It's like, I want to know more about how, what it was like once you got there and stuff. It's just, it's a powerful piece.
It really is. It really is. And I like how you brought up, it's kind of like an awakening of somebody's mind, you know, that inner voice nudging them forward with that sense of hope. So great comment there. And Laurent, your thoughts.
Dreamy distant shores beckon my wistful, weary soul. Too long have I dwelt in limbo at the water's edge, afeard of the murky depths of what lies beneath. I think someone once said that fear was the mind freezer. Yet should I brave the cruel Charybdis before me, only to flounder and drown in the darkened abyss below? If we do not, we flounder and drown at water's edge. The necessity in moving forward is crystallized in the poet's words. The first tentative step is the hardest, but with each I feel my spirit surge joyously as it soars as I run the far distant land growing near. Beautifully produced take on the prompt.
It truly is. Great comment there, Laurent. Yeah, I really thought this had some beautiful imagery and thoughts, very philosophical, very thoughtful, and even tender thoughts. Looking across the ocean swells, I see a blazing beacon casting its path, stretching to my feet, giving me courage. The first tentative step is the hardest, but with each I feel my spirit surge. Such a powerful sense of finding your freedom within these lines of moving forward. So beautifully written and very well done. And let's see what we have next. All right. And up next, we have completed. Oh, wait. Let me click on the actual poem, because sometimes I don't know if the link is the full title. It is. All right. Completed by Forgotten Dream. And Diane, would you read that for us, please?
I sure will. Completed. Hand-sampled palms. Fingers nesting, entwined arms, my lips brush a testing menu of mouths. I crossed coasts and forests, became an explorer of sunshine smiles and crinkling laughs, pausing at stages to see if they fit snugly, but my vining arms clasped too tight, cutting circulation, leaving us both numb. The weather shifts, bringing me back to salty air, foggy woods. And like a streaking star, I see you flash across the periwinkle night, fall into gentle moss eyes, coiling into the nook of arm. Press my chest close to you, matching beats like a metronome. Every painful step and suture holding me together, melts, sizzles, dissolves like butter in a hot pan. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Diane. And he wrote to prompt number 5, which was the poem on the nature of love. She wrote on that prompt. And, I just really think Forgotten Dream has a talent for imagery and metaphor. And, Laurent, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, her imagery really carries the day in this, as well as a beautiful choice of phrasing. Hands sampled palms, fingers nesting, entwined arms, my lips brushed a testing menu of mouths. I love the phrase in there, the way she communicates so much with that, with those brief images, and becoming an explorer, crossing coasts and forests, pausing at stages to see if they fit snugly. Well, they don't right then, but as the weather shifts, the relationship strengthens, and their love is completed. And that's a great, great title for this particular piece. And when it's upon completion, what else are you going to do but melt and sizzle and dissolve like butter in a hot pan? It's a great piece.
It really, yeah, absolutely. And you're right, it does definitely, not only in the title itself, but in her word choice in bringing together the idea that, you know, of becoming complete together. You know, so excellent comment there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, I just love this. I love, you know, that from the first stanza all the way to those last lines with the melts, you know, the every painful step and suture holding me together melts, sizzles, dissolves like butter in a hot pan. Wow, what a wonderful, brilliant, clever metaphor that is. Just amazing. But, you know, I just love how, you know, she starts with hands and sampled palms, fingers, nesting, entwined arms, and then she brings up the lips and then the mouth, and then she goes into him or her, and the way the poet goes into the nature, she brings a nature into the poem, you know, with the foggy woods, the salty air, periwinkle night, the gentle moss, and you know, the coast. I crossed the coast and forest, became an explorer of sunshine, smiles, and crinkling laughs. Well, that's such a beautiful, beautiful stanza. Oh, this is just amazing all the way through. I just enjoyed this poem and just loved it so much.
Absolutely. And I, too, really like it. I like that you brought up the beginning where it says hand-sampled palms, because there's something so very tender and heartfelt and beautiful in the act of reaching out to hold somebody's hand, you know. And wonderful comment there, Naomi. Yeah, I really liked this all the way through. I, too, really appreciate and enjoyed. There's a certain kind of sensuality in, you know, the dissolves like butter in a hot pan. I also really like where it brings up the weather shifts, bringing me back to salty air, foggy wood, and like a streaking star, I see you flash across the periwinkle sky. Just the idea of that falling into each other. The wonderful thoughts on the stages of love that we go through. Beautiful imagery and very well done. All right. And up next we have, all right, yes. Desert of Glass by Ilex Adder. And click on it and it goes like this. Lightning struck sand, birthing a desert of glass, ocean of impossible things, with my bones entombed at its core, waiting for my will to rise, resurrect myself, throw off the chains I naively donned so long ago, risk the shards splicing my feet, for the sunset view through a crystal mirror. Accept the reality where pain cannot always be conquered, but might be mastered. And live gloriously through it all, taking the first step into whatever horizon I have carved, looking forward into tomorrow. End poem. And wow, that is another powerful rite. And Diane, your thoughts?
Oh my goodness, this is powerful, like you said. Desert of Glass, what an image, you know, what a massive image that puts in your mind, like, you know, in a desert, birthing a desert of glass. It's powerful, the image that put in my mind of anything is possible in an ocean of impossible things. And it just struck me how the metaphors in here, and there was a little further down here, and accept the reality where pain cannot always be conquered. And accepting the reality, and that's a powerful metaphor in itself, in accepting life, accepting that this is where you have to go. This is what it is. Look forward to tomorrow. You know, there's not anything else you can do. You can't, like, for the sunset view through a crystal mirror, go through it and go with it and look forward to tomorrow. I didn't, you know, I would like to read more of this writer's work, because this is, like Pam said, powerful.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I do highly recommend Alex's writing and checking it out. But yeah, you know, as you said, I did like that was how this expresses very well the idea of accepting the reality of life, you know, while moving forward. So good comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I see that in the AN. I was trying to find, you know, because it doesn't say what prompt this is written to, but it can suit so many prompts. I mean, I think it's written to the last one, but I'm not sure. But the you know, she has mental health in here, or he has mental health in here, and it's something that, you know, I deal with daily. And you know, sometimes you just have to accept the reality. You accept the reality of all that you can do, and just take it slowly, and take it, you know, like they say in the poem, taking the first step into whatever horizon I have carved, into whatever possibility is out there for you, you know, which are your, and accept your limitations, you know, and try to move beyond them, and to just conquer life. And you know, that first stanza, my gracious, that is just absolutely, you know, beautiful. Lightning struck sand, birthing a desert of glass, ocean of impossible things, with my bones entombed at its core. Wow, that is just amazing writing. Yeah, I hope that this poet writes a lot more for you know, the shows and all the contests out there, because this is just amazing writing here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there, Naomi. And Lauren, your thoughts?
The image of a desert of glass is such a strong one. If you were to be standing at the edge of such a desert and the sun rose, you might almost be blinded by the light, nothing beneath the surface. And yet, up close, when it's a little darker, that desert of glass will allow perfect vision, perfect clarity to what lies beneath. And if you break that clarity, you do stand a chance to slice your feet, as the poet says. But where pain cannot always be conquered but might be mastered is a great way to semi-finish the thought, because you live through that. The desert of glass is abolished. The shard's gone. And you can walk comfortably, so to speak. I thought it was beautifully written.
Absolutely. And you're right. The power or the desert of glass is a powerful imagery. And I, too, really like that. The lines about risk the shard slicing my feet for the sunset's view through a crystal mirror. The idea of risking the pain in order to see clearly the true beauty that awaits. And I also really like that you they use the word carved into whatever horizon I have carved. There's an idea of being in charge of your own destiny, your own journey by the decisions that you make. And so excellent right and very well done. And up next we have my Pad Paradash. I don't know if I pronounced that right. I apologize if I didn't. And it is by T. Michelle. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. My Pad Paradash by T. Michelle. Late in morning after satin white, I'm unpronounced dead. You embalm my underbreasts with paradisic freshwater lake, wax me with sparkly iced sugar and the glitter of reflecting sapphire, wash my stiff shoulders of their almost cinematic stillness. You're all down for slip knots, apricot fingertips calling to despair, crossing from my forearms into hand baskets of flowerbed spice. And the clouds come down, hanging like dewdrops on orange willow leaves, inhabiting the wanderlust from the age I used to dream. Then I open wide as a bud of nectar into the fringes of the whisperer, succumbing as is to the mist, a zephyr carrying the darkest sorrow from my eyes into the peach of your begonias. If in that Himalayan sunset I could burn the sands of palm-lined islets, dripping into a vase of cultivar, my soil would enrich in grace, and my breaths with moments of thanksgiving and thorn.
Wonderful reading, Laurent, and what a beautiful write by T. Michelle. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Wow. I mean, hey, this is such a, you know, I just feel so much emotion in this piece. You know, such a, like a longing here, or a loss, or, you know, just, it's just so painful. My padaparacha, it's you know, a sapphire, the light in the sapphire, or sapphires themselves, I guess. And you know, just so beautiful, the lines in here, apricot fingertips calling to despair, crossing from my forearms into the hand baskets of fire bed spices, and then the dewdrops on the orange willow leaves inhabited the wanderlust. And then, you know, it's just so beautiful. The sapphire carrying the darkness of sorrow from my eyes into the peach of your begonias. And in the end, just amazing, amazing writing. My gracious, this is just, I mustn't say this, but this, I think, is my favorite piece tonight. There's just amazing. Yeah, everything was beautiful. Good luck judging this contest, Pam. My gracious,
yeah,
every poem
you.
We read is just, was just so amazing tonight. Just such another powerful, powerful piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Naomi. And Laurent, your thoughts?
The stanza that reads, "And the clouds came down, hanging like dewdrops on orange willow leaves, inhabiting the wanderlust from the age I used to dream." As I read it out loud, I was shaking my head in wonder And as I read those lines, it is not an easy image to formulate in a new way, but boy, there's so much freshness in the way that she handled the imagery of the dewdrops on the orange willow leaves by introducing the wanderlust from the age I used to dream, connecting the two that way, going back so far and moving it up and into the present was wonderfully done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. And Diane, your thoughts?
Oh, this is a beautiful write. I'm with Naomi. Like, this, reading this right before the, you know, the show is ending, is just a powerful piece. It's come there. Pam, how are you going to judge this? I have the same question. Apad Paracha is a rare sapphire and so rare that, it's the second rarest gem in the world. And represents and stands for is changing your life. It removes the resistance to change your life so that the person wearing it can replace this resistance with clarity. And she obviously knows her stone, you know, and what it does for her, because it talks about it represents joy and energy, and helps you come close to achieving life goals. And she talks about that in the stanza where I opened up wide as a bud of nectar into the fringes of the whisper, succumbing as is to the mist. Meaning there's clarity now, and she took that leap, and she achieved her life goal, and there's clarity, and there was so much power in the description of, in the writing, and the well-chosen words here. Just beautiful.
Absolutely. And I like that you brought up the information about the set it being the second rarest gem, because I think that really adds to the depth of the metaphor in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is beautiful all the way through. I really like, you know, that with paradisic, freshwater lake, wax me with sparkly ice sugar and the glitter of reflecting sapphire. You're the hometown for slipknot, apricot fingers calling to despair, crossing from my forearms into hand baskets of flower bed spice. What a wonderful weaving of imagery throughout, and the there's really a kind of sense of healing within this poem to me, and beautifully written and very well done. Yep.
Now Diane has to tell us the other side of the question. What's the rarest gem? I want to know.
You know, I'm thinking diamond.
Yeah, I know that, but
in our world, it's got to be diamond.
I don't know.
They should have, you know, they should have actually said it. They should have said, like, this is the second one, and number one is, you know, I guess they wanted us to say it.
You know, if it is a diamond, then it's an outrageous color of some kind, like blue or
whatever. I just Googled it. It's the painted.
Painted, yeah. Exactly.
It's the rarest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is the what?
It has like a violet color in it.
Was that a gemstone or a diamond?
Yeah, it's a gemstone. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for looking that up. Very cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they're saying the rarest one in 2022 is a blue diamond costing nearly $4 million per carat.
time. Boy.
Wow, that's pretty spicy.
Rush,
yeah, well, no, it won't be on my, not in my budget anyways. I'm going to have us try to get a couple more poems done. Up next we have The Essence of Being by Rose Winter 515. And it goes like this. The Bard of Bengal, Rabindranath Tagore, brilliant polymath, Nobel Prize winner for literature, expressed love, source of life and being, writing about love, existential, sublime, but marred with tragedy when his dear wife took her own life, suicide. Profound grief engulfed him and his young family, reflected in his poetry, love, death, and souls and poem. And I love the way that Rose decided to center align this poem. I think it works really well with the shaping of the stanzas. I thought this was a wonderful tribute to Rabindranath Tagore and the tragedy of his life and how talented he was in many areas. And I like that she used straightforward language, beautifully expressed. And Diane, your thoughts?
I'm sorry. Can you come back to me? I skipped out there for a sec.
Oh, sure. No problem. Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's nice to familiarize yourself with the poet, and then be able to encapsulate him in words that inform, that praise, and that educate. What hit me the strongest was when his dear wife took her own life, suicide. Profound grief engulfed him and his young family, reflected in his poetry. And then these words, love, death, and souls, is just to me a perfect little encapsulation of the things that we write about almost to the exclusion of everything else. Great poem.
Absolutely. I like that you brought that up, how we oftentimes write about love, death, and souls, because those are such an important part of life and the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I thought this was a great little write, a great tribute to Tagore. The way she writes expressed love, source of life and being, and then in the end, those three words, love, death, and soul, they sort of bring the poem all together, with who Tagore was, and just amazing, that she did her research and came up with this wonderful write here, just amazingly well written.
Absolutely, great comment. And Diane, your thoughts?
Yes, like Naomi said, wonderful tribute. She really did her research and understood what Tagore represents and stands for, the source of life. And I was thinking when I read that, back then, our source of, to me, the source of life is knowledge. It's like the more you know, the more life you have inside you, and the beauty of having that source of understanding inside you is being able to pass it on and carry the message. And he did that. He carried the message, and he told people, this is what you need to do if you want this. Like, if you want a book, write it. If you want to read a book, write it. And then she talks about his sorrow, and I want to read more of his stuff, and and feel in it, because what I read earlier was more of his his encouragement, his optimism, go forward in life and do this and do that and don't live in fear and stuff like that. And in this, you know, I want to read about how he wrote about his sorrow, and it's sad how his his wife took her life, and I didn't see it reflected in his poetry before, but like I said, I would like to read it more. It's a powerful message that he has in all his quotes and everything. I find such a beautiful pattern.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comments, everyone. And up next, our last poem for the night, and there will be three carryovers that I'll get put on another show. Not sure which one, but I'll let people know. And the last poem for the night will be Darkness Does Not Exist by Mickey 1022. And Diane, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. The clouds mingled with light in the heavens, high above, just like all the generations down below, completely unaware of things like time, day, and night. The diversity of stars hovered above the clouds, and the generations down below with a collection of lifetimes, bathing in light that only manifests illumination. The shades of likeness to the abyss only camouflaged itself, like an indentured servant that meets its master in order to be in existence. There is no chaos and there is no peace. There isn't light or darkness. In suspension, the heavens remained consistent to a love of being nothing more and nothing less than that what they were designed to be. I that deceives the heart. The eye retorts, I am not alone in this folly. The ear, the nose, the tongue, the skin, and the heart all do the same. If we are so wrong about light and darkness, how could we ever be right about love? Love can appreciate being nothing more and nothing less than the other's design. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Diane, and such a beautiful write expressing that perfect love, the idea of loving each other and being each other's light. Just a beautiful phrasing and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Sorry.
Are you on mute? Okay.
I caught myself. It doesn't count. All right. The clouds mingled light in the heavens, high above, just like all the generations down below, completely unaware of things like time, day, and night. When you take those lines and you marry it to the image of Trigora sitting there, looking like the ultimate wise man, and anything that's in this poem is going to be to my liking, because to me it grabs who Trigora was, even in the way he writes, in the emotions, in the physicality of his descriptions on display. It's a beautiful write.
It's absolutely great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, she says there isn't light or darkness. In suspension, the heavens remained consistent to a love of being nothing more, nothing less than what they were designed to be. You know, there's different shades of love, you know, that, like she says in her comment below, there is a different shades of love. We often think that light is bright, but in comparison to brighter light, it doesn't seem that bright love is the same. There's peace in the heavens. How about peace in generations below? You know, I think she, like Laura said, She brought in into the right, the essence of everything that Tagore was, and you know that, and so in such a clever and well written piece, just amazing.
Absolutely. Just so you know, Mickey is a he.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem. Sometimes it's easy to get mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of realized that after I said she, I said, oops.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us. But yeah, I like that you brought up part of the idea of the shades of love. So great observations there. And Diane, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
This was powerful. Simple message in there that I pulled out, you know. Darkness doesn't exist. In our world, darkness shouldn't exist. The light should exist. And if we're wrong about darkness, how can we be right about love? It was just a powerful message to me, like, get your facts straight, people.
Absolutely. Well said there, Diane. This has been an excellent show. I've really enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing poetry, amazing company. Thank you, Lawrence, for calling in. Thank you, Diane and Naomi, of course, for co-hosting with me. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. To everyone who wrote for the show, who was listening while we are on live or will be listening to the recorded version later, we truly appreciate you all. Please make sure to keep an eye out on the contest and topic boards put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Much love.
Good night, everybody.